Welcome to the Be the Adult podcast. Be the Adult is a nonprofit organization that provides blueprints for calm and effective parenting so that children can grow into their best selves. Because ultimately, we aren't raising children. We are raising little people who will one day be adults.
Hello, Nancy.
Hi, Marisol. How are you doing today?
Good. I'm out of my element because we usually record on a Sunday and it's Thursday. Everything's going to be on a little bit of a delay for me. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm just taking one moment at a time. And I've always say that in the past, but I really am doing that now.
I was talking to a friend and I said I was really grateful for Be the Adult because it taught me to be in the moment. And so I've been practicing being in the moment and simultaneously like ignoring everything else. From last year to this year, it's just interesting times. It's very interesting.
Yeah, interesting is a good word. We'll leave it at that. It's really Be the Adult too, right? It's about turning the noise down.
Yes.
So we can focus on being our best selves. And it's hard with so much noise. And there's a lot of noise out there right now. So.
Exactly. And I love that we're sharing content that helps parents try to, you know, cancel out the noise and be the best version of themselves for their kids, because I feel like in some small way we're doing something for the world. So this week we have I love this topic. I know I say one of my favorite topics a lot, unless we're talking about the what's the one that I'm
I can't accountability. Accountability. Oh, no, following through. Yes.
No, it's accountability and structure, creating structure. This one is, I consider a joyful one to dive into, which is make time for me. So I'm going to read from the book, from the child's perspective, what the concept is. You're going to tell us a little bit about it from a clinical perspective, and we'll introduce our amazing guest. Make time for me. How? Please spend at least 15 minutes of one-on-one uninterrupted quality time doing something with me every day. Why? This shows me that I am worth making time for and that I matter to you. It also teaches me that I need to make time for the important people in my life, including you.
Yeah, there go my chills too, Marisol.
Actually, I don't know if the audience can hear. I gulped at the 15 minutes because I started in my head. I was like, I love this one because it's simple and it's doable and it teaches children that they're worthy. And I love anything that teaches children that they're worthy.
Exactly. So, yeah. It does a lot of things. Again, we could talk about this for hours, but it encourages communication, right? Because we're actually physically present with them. So we have the space and a little bit of time to interact, to get the energy flowing back and forth, which is really important. Instead of us just talking at them, we can actually be doing something fun and have a conversation. It helps them develop healthy boundaries and behaviors because we are actually modeling that for them and playing games and the other things and actually saying, I have this work project I need to get done. I'd love to spend time with you. So I'm going to work on my project for an hour and then I'm going to schedule 15 minutes for you. So we're, again, modeling boundaries and how to triage what's important. Well, the things that we have to do, right, in life. So models, like you said, the effort in relationship building, how, you know, having healthy relationships takes work. And again, we've talked about more of this with our guests, but it strengthens the family bonds by doing things together. It, you know, helps our families become more cohesive. There's a lot of research that shows that kids who actually spend time with their parents are less likely to engage in those risky type behaviors. There's a lot of research on that. It builds a child's self-esteem because, kind of circling back to what you were saying, Marisol, is that if my parent wants to know me and wants to spend time with me, I must be good enough. And that, again, is really the core of most of what we're doing as parents, and obviously in Be the Adult, is how do we help grow these little people who feel good enough about themselves and then can go out to the world and spread that fairy dust. So at the end, I'll talk a little bit about some suggestions, and we'll get some from our guests too, of how to do this. But first, let me introduce an amazing woman in our town, Wilmington, North Carolina, and in the world, actually. When I first met her, her energy just got me. I was like, oh, I want to spend more time around her. So it's Stephanie Lanier. And one of her core beliefs when you have hardship in life is that you shouldn't waste it. Many words describe her: wife, mom, realtor, entrepreneur, blogger, special needs advocate. Yet being a wholehearted tribe builder is the thread connecting the experiences and creations in her life. Life-changing moments fueled a search for connection, purpose, and spaces for vulnerability. In 2012, she co-founded Wilmington-based Lanier Property Group alongside her husband, Andrew. She also created the Inspiration Lab, which is an amazing organization. It's a membership community for women encouraging work-life integration, deeper friendships, and the design of more manageable and meaningful lives. Wow, what don't you do, Stephanie? This is awesome. So welcome, welcome, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. I already have a page full of notes just from y'all's intro. I'm excited about this.
That's great. So I'll just start with a question, but please feel free to take this any direction you want because it will all be valuable. So I just wanted to ask you what excites you about this topic of spending time with our kids. I'm seeing your face brighter as Marisol and I were talking. You're shaking your head. So tell us more about that excitement.
Yeah, well, I wrote down a note, and someone said this, it's a quote, but they said time is the currency of relationships. And I think, you know, our children see that with us. I mean, that it's true across the board. Like, if you want a stronger marriage, it takes time. Like, time is the thing that we have the least of, that it takes the most of in relationships. And so with our children, time set aside for them, not just being in the same room or building, but what you guys are talking about is very intentional, very locked in, very focused. And you know, the other thing that I hear people say a lot in the marketing world is that attention is the new currency, being able to get someone's attention. So as a marketer, that's what you're trying to do constantly. And there's so many things coming at us. But man, when you think about the role of a child, that's what they most want too. Like, attention has sort of become, attention and time are these things that you can't necessarily make more of. And they're just so powerful. So I think it's a really, we get in the day-to-day, Monday, and you're busy. Do you know what I mean? Life is coming at you in every direction. But when you slow down and look back, this is the thing that a lot of people would tweak and would change if they could. And so just remembering that. And then, I mean, 15 minutes is doable, you know, like this is possible for people. And I think that's exciting too. I think sometimes, I don't know, people tell, like, you know, you should work out for an hour every day. Like, I can't possibly do that, you know, but you can do 15 minutes with your child, and it could become a really joyful part of your day and your routine, you know, to establish that. So I think, I just love the topic. I think it's exciting. And I think we all need help with how to implement it and encouragement in the value in it. But I think everybody sort of gets it, that it's important.
I think it's timely too, because I know pre-COVID on this topic, there was a little bit of pushback from friends or something, like, oh, the schedule is so busy. We're on the go from the minute we wake up to the minute they go to bed. I can't find 15 minutes. And I feel anecdotally that I'm hearing, well, now we have hours to spend. And I know we'll differentiate a little bit with different, you know, ages, because I was laughing as you said something about marketing and time. I was with my oldest this morning, and I didn't clock the time, and we didn't actually speak. We were just in the same room with each other, and he was on his phone, and I was competing for attention with his phone. And at the end of the time, I was like, well, it's nice talking to you. He totally busted out laughing. Like he had the awareness that, hey, I'm here. Let's talk. Let's chat.
So, I love that. I just want to follow up something that you said, Stephanie, about how it could become a joyful part of our day. And I love that because if we can all remember, the only time we can experience joy is when we're present. Mm-hmm. Right? When we're up in our heads and our history, up in our future, it's not conducive to actually experiencing the joy. And so when we are, like your words, locked in, when we're fully present with our kids, then we can be in that moment and have the opportunity to smell the roses, right? To see that beautiful smile on our child's face, to hear that giggle from their bellies. So I appreciate that. I hadn't thought about it that way.
And we do. We have so much to be joyful for. And it's hard. It's hard to compete with everything that is, you know, with their phone, with technology, with everything they have going on to try to get that attention. But if you make it a habit, I think it's something, you know, Nancy, you've mentioned this in previous podcasts. It doesn't matter if you have a sullen teenager. They still want, and they behave like they, the last thing they want to do is spend time with you. They actually really do. Is that accurate?
I mean, for me, I'll tell you guys, you know, I don't know, in my intro, it touched on it, but my son Oliver's 12 and he has lots of special needs and autism and he's medically fragile and he's a cancer survivor and he has epilepsy. And I mean, the list goes on and on. His rare genetic disorder is tuberous sclerosis, which sort of started our journey when he was 19 months old. Do you want me to tell you how he was diagnosed? I mean, we have time for that. So I had a minivan before I even had Oliver. I was going to be a stay-at-home mom with three healthy children. That's sort of what I was thinking in my head. I mean, healthy, I didn't even use that word because I just assumed. I had never thought about having, and I was a young mom, I was 26, you know, I mean, I was just kind of upset that I didn't get pregnant the first time I tried. Like looking back with all that I know about fertility and such, it makes me giggle, but I was pregnant with Oliver. I had this minivan. We brought him home on Christmas Day. And then 19 months later, he started doing these like strange things where he would stop or his head would drop a little bit. But I mean, we have this like blonde head, a blue eyed, sometimes with eczema, little boy who just seems to be healthy. And the doctors kept saying, "You're a new mom. It's probably a virus. It's okay." But Andrew and I began to think something's really wrong, but we couldn't pinpoint it. We couldn't quite name it. And one morning before church, I remember that Oliver sleeping in late and I thought, I'm going to have to go wake him up so we don't, you know, we're not late. And when I went in his room, he was sort of like halfway unconscious. I know a lot more about what was happening now, but at the time I was like, okay, he's alive and breathing, but he's not with us. And so I get on the phone with my brother-in-law, who's an ER doctor. And he was out of state, but, you know, Andrew and I have him on speaker, like, okay, David, like, what is this? And he was like, baby, sleep deeply. You know, he's breathing. He's okay. He has his color, you know, try to give him a bottle. So we're doing all this. And this goes on for about 30 minutes, at which point Oliver starts twitching a little bit. There's like a little twitch on the left side. And we're like, okay, this is kind of weird. And it progresses to the point at which he is eventually having a full body seizure. So he's having a grandma seizure. And we run next door because our neighbor is a nephrologist, which if you don't know, is a kidney specialist, but she's a doctor, right? And she walks in the door and she looks at Oliver and we're an hour into this and have no idea that anything's wrong with our kid. Like we think we have a healthy child. And she says, you need to call 911 right now. And she was like, his lips are purple. And people always say their lips are blue, but your lips are purple when you're not breathing. And over that probably next 5 minutes when we waited for the ambulance to get there, he lost all of his color and he basically was not breathing very well. And so they put him in the ambulance. They took him to New Hanover Hospital, which is our local hospital here. They put him in an MRI machine, or sorry, a CT machine. And they began questioning us because they thought that we had abused him. So they were seeing stuff that looked like his brain was bleeding. And they were really concerned about that. And actually, our brother-in-law got on the phone with the doctor, the ER doctor, and he was like, hey, man, like that can't possibly be what's happening. Like, you know, that you need to keep looking. And so they decided Oliver needed to be airlifted to Chapel Hill. So the seizures are not happening constantly, but they keep happening, right? And we can't figure out, I mean, we're calling the babysitter from the night before. Did he fall down the steps? Did he drink anything? Like, you can tell us, like, please tell us if something happened. She was like, I promise nothing happened. And so he gets airlifted to Chapel Hill. And if you've never seen, you've never been in this experience, you can't go in the helicopter with your child. You can go in an ambulance, but you can't in the helicopter. And watching his tiny little body be lifted into that helicopter, and there's like a chain link fence, and the ground is shaking and the wind is whipping your hair. And I mean, I'm just like, you're never prepared for this. Like, you have nothing else, no context, nothing in your past you can kind of grab hold of. And so my father-in-law drove my husband and I up to Chapel Hill. At this point, like, all of our friends are in church. So we're trying to like call people to say, pray for us. Like, we don't know what's happening. And they tell us, you should probably call some family to come to Chapel Hill. Like, we don't know what's happening. And so we get to Chapel Hill and they call us and they say, we've stopped the seizures, which is a miracle, right? We're so happy about that. He's in the pediatric intensive care unit. And they're like, he is a wild man. He seems to be totally fine. Like, he is running around all over the place and we don't know what's going on. And so Andrew and I are like, this is great. This is amazing. Like, his life is not in danger imminently. Like, he is not going to need neurosurgery. They don't think we abused him. So we get into a room and the doctor comes in and we have the brother-in-law on speakerphone, who's the doctor. And he says, you know, his brain's not bleeding and he was not abused. He has probably a rare genetic disorder. I'm going to name some different diseases and then see if they ring a bell. And he's going through these different things. And then he says tuberous sclerosis. And Andrew's brother, David, on speakerphone is like, hey, say that again. And he says it. And David says, Andrew and dad, because their dad was there, isn't this what mom thought Andrew had when he was younger? Isn't this what y'all took him to ECU to find out about? So my husband has a Sjögren patch, which is a thing that's on your lower back if you have tuberous sclerosis. And the dermatologist locally said she thought Oliver had, or Andrew, my husband, had tuberous sclerosis. But this was like in 81, right? They didn't know much about it. So Andrew's parents, who both have PhDs, by the way, they drive through a snowstorm to ECU. They meet with a geneticist and a doctor there and they say, Andrew's fine. Cognitively, he's great. He's healthy. You don't have tuberous sclerosis. And no one in the family ever spoke about it again until August 1st, 2010. And then it sort of became, okay, we don't just have a rare genetic disorder. My husband has it. Every other child has a 50% chance of having it. It's autosomal dominant. It just was like just such a radical life shift. And I just remember being in the hallway with Andrew and our backs were against the wall. We were crouched on the floor and just sobbing and just thinking like, what does it mean on so many different levels? You know, like, what are we going to face? And we began to read about tuberous sclerosis, 70% chance of autism, cognitive delays, seizures, et cetera. And of course, there were the stories of kids who were okay, like Andrew. Andrew had a very mild expression, which is how he went so long without being seen by doctors. But Oliver ended up with a really severe expression. So that started our journey as special needs parents. And man, it taught me so much about motherhood and all these sort of preconceived notions I had about things. And as the milestones started slipping away, Oliver started regressing. It was just painful. It was hard. And my friend group began to change. And I think all of us have seen this with our kids when their needs change, that sort of, we're going to grow up together. And sometimes that happens for a lot of different reasons for kids. And so that was hard too. It was like a really challenging time to figure that out. But I share all that to say that for Oliver and I, because he no longer can speak, by the way, he could sing and speak in 5-word sentences, and he lost that ability. So we have video recordings of him saying, I love you and mom. And we can't watch them. It's just too hard. But the way that we can be with him now is to just physically be with him, right? Cause he can't talk. So he just wants to hold your hand. He loves to like pretend to put his finger in our mouth. He's really interested in teeth. You know, autism brings out these really unusual interests. He loves to spin rocks. I can't tell you how many hours I've spent spinning rocks, like, and really trying to enter in, like, what is beautiful about this rock? What does it feel like? How does it spin? Like, just trying to enter into his world, which is so quiet and so simple and focused. Like the thing I love about Oliver is that if he gives you a hug or a kiss, he wants to, like, he is not embarrassed of himself. He's never like self-aware. Like if he's naked, he's just like, he has, like if somebody's coming over, he's not tidying up. I'm over here like moving stuff. He's just sitting on the couch, you know, like doing his thing. It's crazy how much it teaches you for a person who has such simplicity in their life. And so if he gives you a hug or a kiss or comes near you, it's because he wants you, not because he should, or grandma needs a hug. It's because you've earned it, frankly. You've earned the ability to be in his life. And it's a really different way of parenting, and a really different way of being, because you have to physically be with him. And if I'm on my phone, he'll try to hit it out of my hand. You know, like he's just like any other kid. He doesn't have language, but he uses his body. And just to be there, to sit with him, to hold hands, to spin a rock, to physically be in his presence. And it's been a long journey for me learning. And I think, you know, we're still in Elmo, like we're still with Yo Gabba Gabba after 12 years. And so I'm like, whoo, okay. Like I'm trying to bring fresh eyes to this thing that I have seen a million times. I know everybody who has a kid with special needs just know, I mean, the repetition in autism is just like, it's comforting for them. It drives me bananas because I like new experiences. Andrew and I can quote Cars completely front to back. Like we know every once in a while we'll notice something new about Cars. And we're like, did you see that cactus at like an hour and 15 minutes? That was unbelievable. And like our nurses, they know it too. They're like college kids and they're like, I didn't know I'd be able to quote a whole movie, but it's this, it's just a different kind of parenting and a different kind of time together. But I'll tell you the other thing is that Oliver, you know, his lifespan and his prognosis is very uncertain for us. And so I am keenly aware, and I would urge your listeners that you have 15 minutes to be with your kid.
Can I just say thank you for sharing that? That is an incredibly powerful story, and you know your journey is, I'm sure, going to help many people have a moment of thought for that and for themselves. So thank you, very much for sharing that.
Can I add to that? Yeah, thank you. Found myself holding my heart, Stephanie, and different emotions as you told your story. My experience shifted as you told each part, but the theme of all of it, I'm fighting my tears back, is your presence with him, and your presence with yourself throughout this whole thing. And I understand what I read so much more deeply about you at the beginning, how you took, is it okay to call it a trauma?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So you took this incredibly traumatic experience with so much loss inherently and other emotions, and you've been able to flow with it to a place where you are so keenly aware of your child's inner world. And I try to remember that every day. Like, I want to know my child's inner world. I want my husband to know mine. I want to know his. I mean, that's really so valuable and important. And I'm just, my heart is pounding for your ability to do that. And I just admire and respect what you've been through and where you are. So thank you so much for sharing that with all of us.
Can I follow up? You know, because you made the great point about time. How, you know, we have 15 minutes. We have 15 minutes to spend with our kids. How, with everything that you have going on, you know, when Nancy read your bio in the intro, how do you find that work-life balance to be the best version of yourself, so that you know you can be present and as joyful with your children?
Well, I like to think of it as work-life integration or rhythm, only because balance is just, it sort of is perfection. Like when you're balancing, it is really hard work. Like you're focused. Rhythm for me is like flowing. And I have a real estate company. I have the Inspiration Lab where we have about 250 women who are members of this community. And I do other things. Like I've got a lot on my plate. So there's a rhythm to it. Real estate is super busy certain times of the year, although that's sort of changing the pandemic. Who saw that coming, by the way? That was crazy. I thought we were going to be eating beans and rice, and now we're selling houses to people from Wisconsin who've never been here. But, you know, we're flowing, we're going. But that's the rhythm. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's sometimes work is really busy, and I'm not going to beat myself up if there are three or four nights where I've not had a ton of intense time with Oliver, because I know over the weekend I'm going to get that time. Like, there are just times when as adults we've got to focus, or there might be a family member who's sick, or I've got to go do something else, right? So I try not to beat myself up. It's more about that kind of rhythm of finding things. Oliver's physical caregiving is so time intensive. Like, we feed him through a G tube. He has help with bowel movements through a C tube, which is like an entire irrigation in the morning that takes an hour, and it's like a thing. So I'm with him a lot, because I sort of like, I mean, you have to be, right? And he loves that attention in the midst of that basically medical procedure that's happening. So there's part of it for me that's forced rhythm, I would say. But I think for me, I think time, we have to think about time as like, everybody has 24 hours. Time is the great equalizer, right? But energy is not. I have more energy than most people. So in an hour, if you're energized, you can do way more than the average person. Because I got real frustrated with this idea of time. I was like, I feel trapped by time. And I feel like this is true, especially with a child who may not have a normal lifespan, right? Is like, time can feel like this terrible trap. But your energy, to your point, your presence, like how in the moment you are, that matters too. And so I really think for me, thinking about energy management as much as time management really helps me. Crazy about my sleep. I don't even play around with sleep. Like, to me, everybody's like worried about losing weight or whatever. I'm like, you will naturally lose weight if you sleep well. Like, your body won't pack on all that cortisol and such. Like, sleep to me is the foundation, makes you emotionally regulated. Like, you guys know this, right? From a mental health perspective. So sleep has been the thing that we've always been pretty early on in the journey. I was like, oh, this is a no-brainer. We're going to eat, like, we can do this for ourselves. And also at 9 o'clock at night, you're probably getting dumber. Like, what are you watching that is possibly, I mean, truly, like, by 9 o'clock, you're probably doing something or laundry or something that could wait when you could sleep. And I think once you get how valuable sleep is in your life, you get a little protective of it. So sleep is a big deal for me because it brings me that energy and that sort of emotional regulation to deal with my really stressful life. I mean, Oliver had two life-threatening seizures in the past week where he stopped breathing, lost his color. We're wondering if we need to give rescue meds. And then I'm like, going to go have to negotiate a real estate deal. And that's my real life. If you're exhausted and in a bad mood and emotionally dysregulated going into that day, nobody's going to want to follow you. You're not going to be a good leader. You're not going to be effective. So I just think you have to be, your listeners have to be realistic about the limitations in their life. And for me, a limitation is I have to have a lot of sleep in order to do my life in the way I want to do it. It could look different for other people. For my husband, Andrew, he has to work out. I swear it is like he takes like a Zoloft, like, pill. I mean, it's crazy mental health wise what that does for him. But knowing your, that thing for you, those things for you is so important. And then unapologetic about it, you know, like, it's, I always say this, like, self-care is not selfish. Self-care is strategic. It really is, right? I mean, I'm so tired of this narrative that self-care is selfish. It's not. People count on you. And if you're falling apart, it actually harms them. And so that's, I mean, for me, sleep is the foundation of self-care and this whole idea of being present. Also, if you're tired and yawning, I mean, what kid wants to, you know what I mean? Like, if your mom's yawning when you're trying to like play Legos, I mean, you know,
so. Nancy talks about having grace for ourselves as parents all the time. On every episode, we broach that subject because I think so many things you said are so relevant to all of us. You know, the time constraints and just how to deal with life. I think you're very inspiring for sharing all of that.
So, Stephanie, how else do you feed your soul? What else energizes you? Can you go to the store and buy the energy in a can somewhere? Because please let us know the secret.
Oh, man. if you could, that would be crazy. Kind of half the fun of getting energy, though, is like finding what jazzes you up. You know what I mean? Part of it is paying attention. What gets you excited? Did you listen to a podcast that either did make you grab your heart? Like, what is connecting to you physically, emotionally, whatever, like you got to pay attention to that stuff and write it down, because it's, I think that a lot of like serious energy, the kind that will keep you going through really hard things, is nuanced. It's not, does that make sense? Like so obvious. It's like, it's not spending time with friends. It's certain friends doing certain things, right? So one of the things I try to do every weekend is go for a walk with a friend. That's very COVID friendly. I don't like to exercise and I know I should. So I just try to think of this movement. Mm-hmm. I need to move. And so moving and talking is something that's been safe and good. I try to do that every week. And that really energizes me. Also helps me not get in my bubble of like, what do they call it in AA? Terminal uniqueness, right? Like I do have a hard life. Like for real, I do. But other people have really painful, hard struggles. Me, a teenager with an eating disorder, like I don't know that I would trade that for my thing. Like that's really hard. So entering into somebody's life and story and is so, so good for me, and cheering for them and loving on them. So walking with friends, hydration is key. Water is free, hopefully, in most places in America, although it's a little bit appalling that we don't have free, safe water everywhere. But for the most part, we have access to hydration, which is just a no-brainer. I have migraines. It's hot here. You know, like the basics, people want self-care and energy to be like some sexy thing. It's really not. It's kind of like foundational pieces. I did find myself in a funk though, like 2 months ago. I was just so like, meh. Like I felt like Eeyore when I normally feel like Tigger, you know, where I'm always like bouncing around. And I realized my input was the problem. Like my output was so negative and kind of boring because all I was doing was watching TV at night with my husband. I'd stopped podcasts. I'd stopped reading. I just kind of fell off the wagon on feeding my mind. And if you want to have good output, the input has to be healthy and good. And I challenged a friend who had kind of gotten in that funk too, because you're not going to conferences. Like it's just a weird time professionally. So I said, we'll send each other a podcast every week. Just anything. It could be anything about anything. And it has just reignited me. I got a huge stack of books. I've been reading through books like it's my job again. And I found myself again. I was like, I don't want to lose that part of me again. That was really drained my energy. And so I think that's key. And then I think it's really important to, you just have to really look at time as the gift that it is. And like, if your whole weekend is open on your calendar, I would challenge you to say, put some stuff in there, put some boundaries in there. Time is going to just, time needs to be like a river. You got to channel it somewhere. And I think our quote unquote free time, we squander it away sometimes. It's like, could you go take a bath for 30 minutes? Probably. And a hot bath will do wonders for you. Hot shower, right? You know, like, and I would say if I feel emotionally dysregulated, I mean, I do this a lot. I take a shower and I go to bed. Like it helps me the most. When I literally feel like something in my brain, like the dopamine, the serotonin, it's wacky. I don't even know how to explain. I'm so overwhelmed. I can't quite process. It's like, take a shower, go to bed. If you don't feel better in the morning, you need to reach out. Like that is probably the start of a pattern where you need some help, and that's okay. But often I think we've got to turn down the noise, and that's kind of a good way, you know, to do it. I don't know. That's sort of a roundabout answer. Oh, one more thing. Your car is your refuge, right? I mean, you can sit in the driveway in the garage. I love my car. It's one of the only places I'm by myself. It's got all my stuff. I can cry there. I can listen to music. I just feel like for those of us who have cars that aren't always with other people in them, use that. Cause sometimes you can't ever get away. You're not really alone. Do you know what I mean? And sometimes you need to be alone. And, that for me, I mean, I wrote about that in an Inspiration Lab newsletter. I wrote like something like, it's the temple of my tears. I mean, it was like about a really sad emotional thing. And so many people reached out to me and said, I do that too. And I was like, well, yeah, cause that's your spot, you know?
It sounds to me the theme of everything you were talking about. Tell me if this is true. And I saw you kind of touch your heart at one point when you were talking about, you know, what feeds you, is that you reconnect with you.
Yeah.
So a lot of people at my experience, and I used to do this too, I'd like, okay, I need energy. I'm going to look outside myself. I need a new hobby. I need a new something. When what I'm hearing you say, which has been true for me, is what I really need to do is look inward, reconnect with me, notice me. When is my energy higher? When is it lower? What feeds my soul? What makes me anxious? And the more we can get to know ourselves, I think the more we can I love your analogy about kind of harnessing that energy of the river into a direction that feeds us. Did I get that right? Is that?
It's so well said. And as we're so busy looking at what somebody else is doing. I mean, I am, everyone has a Peloton bike apparently, but me, and everyone's like, you have to do this. You're going to love it. And I'm like, I'm not in sixth grade. Like, I'm not going to, I love y'all and bike away, sister. But like, that is not for me. It's crazy though, as an adult woman who I feel like is very confident, how hard it is to still fight against that. I think it's true in parenting too. You know, it's like everyone's on the travel baseball team or everybody's taking a second language or whatever. It just, sometimes you have to really slow down and say, okay, what is going to work for my life? And so I think, yes, you have to turn inward, but sometimes turning inward is scary. Mm. I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, I've, as Lisa Brooks said, who's I think a mutual friend of ours, but like I've done a lot of the work, you know, I mean, like I've been in counseling since Oliver was diagnosed, on and off as needed. I have a coach for my business. Like I get a lot of help for myself because I realize I'm dealing with an extraordinary level of stress. And for people who are listening to this, who are caregivers too, or have something extraordinary in their life, the temptation is to say everyone is struggling. Yes, everyone's struggling, but there are levels of stress and things that people are carrying that need extra care. And so in the same way that like a scratch on your arm would take a Band-Aid or a huge gash would take, you know, stitches and a surgeon and packing, you got to treat your life in an appropriate way. And so I think that for me, it's just, I know I have to go all in on self-care. Everything I know about being a caregiver and having special needs children and wanting to make my marriage work and be a joyful place too. Like it just seems like the only option. And if I look around at what my friends are doing, it's just not necessarily going to help my story, right? And my limitations and resources and all of that. So I think it's hard to do that, but it's so important. And we can be inspired by people, right? But we got to look inside.
I want to take that little bit that you just said, cut it and like play it at all middle schools for little girls. Yeah. Like learn this now. Don't compare. Don't even look at what X, Y, and Z is doing. Just focus on yourself, which to your point from earlier, you know, goes against what many of us of our generation were probably taught to do, which, you know, is a common theme. So
I love that. I love that, Maricel, too. And it's like this fishbowl, right? I mean, they can compare themselves 24 hours a day. I want to say a bigger number than 24 because it's that.
With the social media and, you know, FOMO, they have terms for it now, FOMO, fear of missing out. And, you know, I'm being gender specific. I'm sure it's a, you know, all genders, but I, having had two daughters go through the middle school experience, I just want to cut that out and make it a whole thing for girls. Don't compare. It's just, there's no return on investment for that. So.
No, but I think if you can teach them to notice when it tiny pops up, right, is like, and then how do you address it? Because it will, I do think it follows you the rest of your life, right? And I just had this happen with a person in real estate where I was like, I got introduced and I was like, she gave a TEDx talk. And I was like, I bet hers was better than mine. So then I look it up and I'm like, oh, she's got like way more views. And probably my mom is the only one who's looked at mine, you know? And I mean, I just start down this rabbit hole and then I'm like, oh, she's a top three realtors in Raleigh. And I've made Tina into this, like, I don't know, not a human, right? And I connect with her and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so glad my own insecurities did not stop me from being friends with you. But even at 39, with all I know and going to school to be a social worker, it's still there. And I think just like learning to embrace it, talking about it, and then leaning into those women that make me feel that way. Because what I want to flip it on is like, instead of comparing, how can I aspire to the things that I see and love in them? Like trying to make it sort of about, what if we bring our lights together? Where could we go with this? Like flipping it, because it's sort of, man, the middle school girl who gets left out and her feelings hurt is still alive and well. I just have better coping, you know, I got some better coping mechanisms and that sort of thing. But the comparison is, I would say for me, the comparison is not hard for me though with parenting, because I feel like everyone's on I-40 going at different speeds. But y'all, for the most of you with healthy children, I mean, they're going to stay in your home. At some point, they will hopefully leave the nest. They may get educated somewhere else. They'll get a job, hopefully find a partner, maybe have kids. Like this is a pattern that your life may or may not take, but most people are on I-40 doing that. We're like on a back road. I don't know where we're going. I don't know how fast we're going. sometimes Andrew and I are like, let's build a pit stop for another family who might be on this road, but we can't even possibly look at the I-40 because we're just, you know, going over here. And that has freed me up in parenting. Huge. Professionally though, I'm on I-40 with everyone else. So I can get that looking left and right and thinking, oh, they're going a little faster. I need to speed up. But when something in your life just goes off in the back road, if you can learn to just like look around and accept it and let it be beautiful, it's a real gift.
That takes us right back to make time for me. And I think we should use it in a dual way for this podcast. Make time for you yourself as a parent and for your children, because I think that was the lesson I'm taking away from this. So Nancy, do you have any more questions for our guest?
I love that. We're going to make a bumper sticker out of what you said, Stephanie. But making time for me as the parent models for my child that importance, and engaging in self-care also models that. And what a beautiful gift we can give our kids when they're little. And then maybe when they reach middle school, then they're like, what is that people are doing? I'm over here taking good care of me. Wouldn't that be great? No, I just really am appreciating everything that you shared today, Stephanie. You're modeling your vulnerability and your courage and how you take situations and find the beauty in them and find ways to feed your soul, which is what we're talking about doing for ourselves and for our children. I just really appreciate that. And listeners, even if you can only find 5 minutes, start there. Start with 5 minutes of going in another room and taking deep breaths, or just walking out that front door, or sitting in your car for 5 minutes if your kids are safe, right, in the house. And if you can only find 5 minutes with your child, that is a beautiful place to start, with the goal someday of adding more time to it. And when you use that time in the moment with your child, the most important thing for me, and also time for myself when I do this for myself, is to be fully present in it. So use your five senses, right? That helps us stay in the moment. Look at your child and say, hey, I just want to know you. And they might look at you like you're crazy, and that's okay. It'll feel good. And like Marisol said at the beginning, teenagers pretend like they don't want to spend time with us, but they really do. Even adult children do. So all of us always want to feel like we matter, that we're relevant, that we're the relationships we are in appreciate us, value us. So wherever you can start for however long, start there. And I just want to thank you, Stephanie. Is there anything that you want to share or talk about that we haven't talked about today?
Well, there's so many things I could say. I took so many good notes. I love that. I'm learning here. And I would just say, as a parent who may not have all the time in the world with their child, that you make time for the things you value. And I think you value and love your child more than anything in the world. And make sure that your calendar reflects that. You have power over that. And it's a gift that's going to be denied to many of us. And so, you know, sometimes we just got to reorient our perspective and our thinking on that, you know? And so it's such a great invitation. And even for the women and men who are listening, when they say like, oh, I have another birthday, I don't want to turn this age. And you're like, oh, but it's a gift. If you've stared down a pediatric cancer diagnosis, if you're dealing with something hard, I mean, like, blow the candles out with joy, like celebrate the life that you have. And I think that is the big takeaway with your child, whoever and however your child, you know, is going to grow up to be, is to be there with them and to savor it. So that's sort of what I'd be leaving everyone with, is that thought.
Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story and giving us some great insight on how we can, I love the word flow. So flow better in our life. Nancy, thank you again for everything you do for Be the Adult. To our listeners, please share, like, and subscribe. All those things do help us share our mission. And remember, we do have a merchandise store if you'd like to hold yourself accountable for anything. Use our logo to do it. go to www.betheadult.org and you can find more information there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.